talk about the history of and impact of asbestos in the occupational health section and in the U.S. and internally. Mark is the health and safety director for the SEIU since around 2003. But Mark's been working in industrial hygiene and occupational health since 1981, and we welcome him.
You're doing great work. Thank you, Bill.
Okay, good. Thank you. Oh, it's great to see such a great turnout for the history. So thank you all for being here. And I'm honored to be here. This was a presentation that was originally going to be done by Linda Reinstein from ADAO, who's really been a pioneer in both creating that organization and keeping the issue of asbestos alive and connecting asbestos victims and their families to occupational safety and health and other professionals, and I have the greatest respect for her and I'm honored to be here. She fortunately was called away to Australia to help them deal with their asbestos issues, and so she reluctantly chose that, and I'm happy to step into her place here. So I have no relationships to, unless it's related to Ebola, then I have a lot of things to perform, So what we want to look at here is really talk about the history of asbestos in the U.S., which has been an occupational exposure that's spanned 100 years of our section and is going to continue to be an issue with our section, but also talk about kind of where we got to where we are today, which is we still have to deal with asbestos. And just so a couple things here, there's been a huge amount of asbestos that's been used in this country in the last 100 or so years. Much of it is still in place and is still there. Even though one of our hospital industrial hygienists told me last week that their 100-year-old hospital in New York has no asbestos in it. So it's still there. Okay. U.S. is one of the nations which has not yet completely banned asbestos, which is one of our really ongoing problems. And we have a lot of people still dying from asbestos-related disease, although they tend to die slowly, and they don't really show up. And except that if you watch TV, you see lots of attorneys, plaintiff's attorneys, advertising for mesothelioma. And we did a training for some of our SEIU nursing home workers in the last few weeks, and they didn't know what the word asbestosis meant, but they all knew what mesothelioma meant. So for me, starting off in 1981, where workers never understood mesothelioma but knew asbestosis from the trades, this is a huge shift, and I think it has some troubling implications, which I'll talk about down the road. So we still see asbestos exposure in this country for both consumers, environmentally, and occupation, and we're going to focus in on the occupation part here. We're still seeing lots of mesothelioma deaths and still seeing deaths from asbestosis over the years. Okay, more the mesothelioma seems to be more environmentally, maybe consumer-related, the asbestosis more work-related. And we still see lots of asbestos victims. And ADAO, and I agree with them, they look at the victims are people who've been exposed to asbestos, who have asbestos-related disease, but also their families who suffer from this. And many of the families are often stunned when their loved one is diagnosed with an asbestos-related disease, because the thought is this was an old disease that is no longer around, right, until it affects their family. And Linda's husband and others in ADAO, and that was how she got into this in the first place. So it's important to, I'm going to go through the history in a little bit, but it's important to remember that the asbestos industry is spending huge amounts of money to keep their industry alive. And although it's moved away more from the U.S. Internationally, the industry has spent a huge amount of money in trying to keep their work alive. These are the top asbestos producers. With recent statistics, Russia being one of the prime ones and doing a lot of work to keep the industry alive and oppose the position of folks like us who say asbestos is really bad and needs to be banned and needs to not be used. So we're having a lot of trouble with that. And here are the top 10 asbestos users based on recent statistics. And so lots of developing world, but not entirely. And India is the world's biggest asbestos importer and using huge amounts of asbestos as they continue to industrialize and grow. And it looks like the U.S. many years ago in Canada with all the jobs related to it and manufacturing plants. So this is now resetting the long latency period of exposure and when we're going to be dealing with this 20, 30, 40, 50 years down the road in that country. But the U.S. is not is still a part of this world. And so even in the U.S., even though the consumption of asbestos has gone way down since the 1980s, we still see asbestos being imported and used into asbestos-containing products that are legal to be used. Roofing materials, primarily flooring materials and some others. Okay. And so as Linda says, and her ADAO colleagues, the deadly hugs continue. So let's see how we got to where we are here. So if we go back almost to the beginning of our section, asbestos was an issue. And if we look at some highlights here, in 1918, insurance companies began refusing to sell life insurance to workers who made asbestos products and worked around asbestos because they had the data that showed what was happening to these workers. Okay. 1936, Johns Manville and other manufacturers hired the Saranax Labs in New York to do research on the dangers of asbestos, and they identified asbestos as a likely carcinogen, but there was a deal struck that none of this research would be made public, would be released without the okay of the asbestos industry, which didn't happen. Okay. There was other work done in England and other places that showed the dangers of asbestos. It was published in some of the literature, but not literature that was open and that many people saw. And it wasn't until really the early 60s when Dr. Solikoff worked with the Insulators Union in New Jersey and started to identify the huge increase in asbestos-related disease among union insulators. And that really, Dr. Solikoff and colleagues then were the ones who really started to help push this issue into a sort of modern way to look at it. We get into the 1970s, we see some optimism here with Occupational Safety and Health Act of 1970. EPA was created in 1970. And so both of those agencies spent early resources looking at the asbestos issue. If we look at the one of OSHA's first occupational health standard was a standard for asbestos with a PEL of 5 fibers per cc. You know, much greater than we have now, but at least that was considered an advancement at that point. Okay. Into the 1980s, pressure continued and actually accelerated. In 1986, we have the passage of the Asbestos Hazard Emergency Response Act, AHERA, which applied to asbestos in schools, but set up training requirements, asbestos survey requirements, asbestos management plan requirements that probably still are some of the best guides that we have out there today for schools, and we certainly encourage other facilities to follow those same plans. Unfortunately, many schools talk about AHERA as an old law. So I guess you don't follow old laws like the Ten Commandments, but still at least we had this on the books in schools. OSHA updated their asbestos standard. There were big fights with organized labor leading those and others to get OSHA, even in the Reagan days, to update their asbestos standard. And then in the end of the 1980s, there was an EPA actually put out a ban on asbestos products called the Ban and Phase-Out Rule that many of us at times thought as the gold standard we were going to get here. We were going to ban almost all uses of asbestos. It would become a historical disease that we could deal with over time with the asbestos in place, but that it would be gone by the time we all retired, hopefully. Unfortunately, in 1991, the U.S. Circuit Court of Appeals vacated the ban and phase-out rule. It left some things banned, but other things are still legal to be used in this country, and so I think that took the wind out of the sails of a lot of us and a lot of the movement to really get rid of asbestos. There was a thought among many government people that I remember talking to at the time that, well, the industry would phase this out because people didn't want asbestos products and that you would not find asbestos probably soon because everybody would just act like it got banned, even though it wasn't truly banned. And I remember hearing that up until the late 1990s, when I started seeing weird labels at Home Depot on floor tiles, which seemed to say there's asbestos in these tiles, you should check it if you're going to install it. But and the EPA would say no, that's not happening. But they weren't checking, and then ultimately we found out that there was an increase of importation of asbestos, and it was still being used in products. In some places, being reinstalled into schools where AHERA said they had to take it out, and they're putting in asbestos floor tiles in its place, and so we had this problem. So from 1991, after the ban and phase-out rule sort of took the wind out of the sails up until the current day, the asbestos issue hasn't gone away, but in terms of occupational safety and health, it's something we've really, I think, moved away from, and we've gone on to other issues, and for, you know, there's lots of issues and lots of reasons for it, but that this is still an ongoing problem that has sort of taken a back seat. We had an issue with the World Trade Center of asbestos, but it was also lots of other things that were there. Linda formed ADAO in the early 2000s because of her own personal experience and the experience of others' families, and decided there was a need to kind of move something forward. Initially, I don't think she was even so aware of all the work that had been done in the decades previous to this, so she started fresh, but with an idea of bringing victims and families together with occupational health and other professionals, really tried to kind of jumpstart, and thought that their basic goal would be to ban asbestos, and didn't think it would be all that hard in the U.S. since we were almost there. Has found over the years how hard this is actually going to be. Okay. And APHA in 2009, we got a resolution passed on the need for the U.S. to eliminate asbestos and to ban asbestos use. By 2013, more than 50 countries have banned asbestos, not the U.S. And so we become one of the problems because those countries that still manufacture and import asbestos, when they're pressed, often point to the U.S. and say, the U.S. hasn't banned it yet. We all know they're the leaders in this issue, so therefore it can't be that bad. Otherwise, the U.S. would have banned it. And so they use that against us over and over again. So we continue to see occupational exposures, even in our nation's capital. There have been issues over the last couple of years. I mentioned in hospitals that I run into where we're still seeing worker exposures, although it's denied, World Trade Center. And so we continue to see that construction workers are still continuing to be exposed to asbestos. There are issues of asbestos abatement and demolition where the sense that we have is that the workforce has changed so much where the workforce that used to do demolition and used to do asbestos abatement had ties to the asbestos industry. And I know when I did a lot of asbestos training, you often didn't have to talk about the dangers of asbestos because students would talk about nursing their father and their grandfather and their uncles through mesothelioma as they died. And so the workforce generally was much more aware and connected to the asbestos-related disease. That seems to be completely gone now. Most of the workforce is non-union. Most of the workforce are often immigrant workers who have no connection to the history of this issue and really don't understand, I think, why there are all these provisions in place when there is asbestos abatement, or know to look when they're doing demolition and things aren't being done properly because they have no connection and ties to this work that many others did. We also see other workers still connected or still being exposed, like firefighters and others. Okay. ADAO did a survey a while ago, and they were talking to workers and about asbestos issues before they had some extra training, and found out that most workers sort of didn't have a high regard for asbestos as a concern of their work. They tend to think of it as a historical disease. After the training, though, that completely flipped around when they heard that it was still around, you could still be exposed and people were still dying. So we know education worked with AHERA. It worked with worker training certification for a while. And, you know, we probably need to figure out how to get back to it. So as I channel Linda, she would say we need to rebuild a culture of prevention. We need to get back to kind of finishing the work on asbestos prevention. We need to stop all uses of asbestos. WHO and ILO agree. We need to come up with increased screening programs and surveillance. We need to do the education. Linda would always say we need to do more social media, so I would agree to that. There's lots of challenges, and you know, we still see the asbestos industry propaganda about that asbestos can be used safely, and the U.S. knows how to do that, so therefore there's no reason to ban it. We do have this long latency period from diagnosis to exposure, which, you know, if you think about that there are ongoing exposures today in this country and countries like India, that we're going to be dealing with this, so that the youngest of you here will still be seeing this issue, unfortunately, by the time you retire. Okay. Luckily, we're seeing some support from the acting surgeon general last year, said that recognize that the asbestos issue is not gone and continues to this day, but we need to have more concerted effort and action, which may not be likely politically very soon, but as an occupational safety and health section, it might be time for us to rethink how we collectively work on this issue, maybe refocus to go back to try to finish this scourge that's been around more than 100 years. Linda would talk about their group and their work on education, advocacy, and community, and I think her group has probably done the most effective use of families and victims connected with health and safety and other professionals that I've run into in my 30-some years in this work, and proud to always be supportive and helpful to the work that they do. And so I urge you all to come to their fall, their spring meeting when they hold it in D.C., and show up and join that, and go to their website. There's lots of really wonderful material on their website. And I'm just going to, as I say thank you, I'm going to just put a shout out to my YouTube channel, because I didn't put my slide on there. So I have, my YouTube channel has over 70 films from 1920 to 2003 from the history of asbestos use up to abatement and control. And it's on the back of the program. Thank you. The link to it, so they're mostly public domain. They're free to have you use in presentations and other places. So that's my plug for my channel. And so thank you on behalf of Linda and on behalf of myself. And, yeah. Thank you.